VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility, there's more to iPhone.
I'm Manveen Rana from The Story, a daily news podcast from The Times. Join me and my co-host, Luke Jones, for a deep dive into the big stories and investigations. Plus, each month, William Hague hosts an agenda-setting interview with a key newsmaker or big thinker. That's The Story, The Times' daily podcast that brings you one remarkable story told in depth. Listen every weekday on The Times radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello everyone, this is The Ruck from The Times and The Sunday Times, and it sounds a bit different, doesn't it? And there's a big reason for that. I'm at Gatwick Airport, just about to get on a flight to Dubai and then Perth as I'm joining The Times coverage down there. Bit of a change of plan, last minute, bit of a rush. And this is going to be a bit of a ruck with a difference. We're going to try and tune in with the Scottish tour in Argentina, the Irish tour in New Zealand, and then on the other side of these couple of flights, I will update you from Perth. But for now, bon voyage to me, and see you on the other side.
Well, thank you for that, Will. As you've just heard, Will Kelleher has been flown out to Australia for England's tour Down Under. So this week, you're stuck with me, Alan Dimmick, and on today's podcast, we are going to be previewing the summer tours for Ireland, Wales and Scotland. Last week, Will and Alex were in Richmond for England's squad announcement, so this week it's the turn of the other home unions. And maybe by the end of this, Will have even arrived and collected his bags. So to help us today, we've got former Ireland hooker Sean Cronin. He previews Ireland's trip to New Zealand. We've also got broadcaster and journalist Lauren Jenkins, who will give us an insight into the Wales camp for their tour to South Africa. And from Argentina, we are joined by the Sunday Times Scotland's Mark Palmer. But first, let's hear from Cronin, who I spoke to on Monday evening. It's a massive tour to New Zealand for Ireland, who were impressive in the Six Nations. And, as we discovered this week, they'll also be facing a familiar face in former coach Joe Schmidt, who, due to a COVID outbreak, has joined the All Blacks coaching staff. Here's what Sean had to say.
Sean, my first question for you is, did you see the news about Joe Schmidt and go, here he is, he knows all the secrets?
I did. I saw it early this morning, and I suppose, number one, had a bit of a laugh, chuckled to myself, the fact that, you know, Ireland's first time touring in 10 years in New Zealand. And, you know, Joe had obviously, he'd said post-World Cup, he was stepping away from the game. And then he was obviously working with World Rugby and then got involved with the Blues. So it's funny how things work out. But yeah, he'll have a major inside line on a lot of the lads that he's worked with in the past, and you know, how they might approach the games. And it's just funny the way things work out. And I suppose it just adds another layer to the whole series, really, with Joe probably going to be, you know, overtaking a lot of the stuff for this week anyway, as guys return from COVID. So definitely very interesting.
And it's great to talk to you about the tour in general, because before we went, Andy Farrell was talking about something, and it sort of hit home, is with all the World League stuff going on and the possibilities of, you know, teams playing two or three different nations during a summer window in years to come, this could be one of the last proper tours for an international side. And, you know, they're doing it right. They're playing a couple games against the Maori. They're playing three tests against New Zealand. But what do you see as this? I mean, that aside, how big a task is this? Like, it's as tours go, it's a daunting one.
Yeah, it's huge. I think from just looking from the outside in, I suppose it's all geared. The five game focus that they have on the tour is geared towards the World Cup. Obviously, be a smaller squad when that comes around, but trying to put guys under as much pressure as possible. get a look at guys as well. And I suppose no tougher place to go than to New Zealand with a World Cup next year, and get a good look at guys, put them in that environment and see how they go. You know, putting those two extra Maori games in there has really take, you know, people are stepping back going, wow, this looks like it could be a really, really tough 3-4 week schedule. So it's all those things combined, I think, is that he wants to have a look at these guys under the biggest pressure of all, and see how that kind of tailors into their World Cup prep as well.
Do you think we'll see some guys, maybe guys that Farrell might not know too well, put their hand up in these Maori games and you know, grab test selection? Do you think that's possible?
Yeah, I think so. Even, I suppose, you know, I think the team will be named tonight for the game on Wednesday. And I suppose the back row is kind of an interesting one, where you'll probably have the likes of Nick Timoney, Gavin Coombs. Second row as well could be interesting, but, you know, Treadwell and whoever joins him in the second row as well. So back line, Hume, who's been playing outstanding for Ulster this year, definitely he's so close to maybe, you know, getting a start possible. And there's definitely guys there that I think, you know, if they go well on Wednesday, maybe not for this week, but for the following week, for that second test, could be in with a big shout or pushing themselves into test selection. So it's really interesting, you know, the whole aspect of having that Maori game first up as well. You might have guys doubling up on the bench as well, doubling or benching on Wednesday and then benching again at the weekend. So I've never been in that scenario, unless maybe at a World Cup possibly, but that's going to be tough as well, trying to fit back in then to the test team if you were to bench again on the Saturday. It's going to be tough.
It's an interesting one, isn't it? Because touring, it's about bonding together as a unit, but having that bit of competition, that sort of added bite in training, you know, guys that sort of see their, what could for some people will be the last opportunity really before, because the Six Nations, you probably want to be rolling with the best squad that you've got in World Cup year. So it's an interesting one, isn't it? Do you think that adds an extra dimension?
Well, I suppose it's a luxury as well that, would have been a tour that he could, I think 40 guys went there. I thought more players would go. I thought maybe 44 or 45 players. So he has that luxury, Andy Farrell, of being able to bring, we'll say, an extra 7-8 players on top of a World Cup squad to get it, so that he can try and get a look at every guy that maybe he has on that shortlist that could potentially be in this World Cup squad. Or so it's definitely going to be a huge opportunity for certain guys, maybe, like you said, maybe a potential last shot kind of to force themselves into reckoning for November Six Nations as well. So, like I said, 40-man squad, you're not going to have that again until the Six Nations possibly comes around. So,
is there anyone you're particularly looking forward to running out in green?
I suppose with the blue tinted glasses on of Leinster, I'd be, you know, really looking to see if Kieran Frawley maybe gets a run at 10 at out half. He's a superb player, along with Harry Byrne as well, who, you know, Harry hasn't played that much rugby this year, kind of had a few injuries, but has huge ability as well. And again, I suppose that's kind of leading into the whole Johnny Sexton debate, where Ireland really need to try and find, along with Joey Carberry, unearth someone that is, if something happens to Johnny Sexton, that we can just slide some guy in seamlessly and it doesn't affect the rhythm of the team. I like the back row, Coombs. He'd come back from an injury, played in the URC quarterfinal against Ulster. I think he's a very good player. So there's a few guys there that I'll be really keen to see how they go in that pressure. Maori in Hamilton, a lot of history and culture behind their team, and a good few All Blacks in there as well. So it's there's a few guys there that I'm keen to have a look at and see how they progress in the tour.
Just looking at things from the All Blacks point of view, obviously there's a lot to contend with coaches and a couple of players falling out the squad this week with COVID. Not the best preparation for the All Blacks, but where do you think they are at the moment? do you think that is it possible that this is, if you're going to catch them, now's the time when you're Ireland?
Yeah, I think it's a funny one. I think obviously Foster has come, he's coming under a bit of heat now at the moment as well. I was commentating with the game that they played against Ireland in November, and look, I know Ireland played outstanding on the day, but I thought it was one of the worst performances I've seen from an All Black team in a long time. No, I know, look, they were coming to the end of a long, long schedule, Super Rugby, a lot of tests as well, but they are under big pressure to perform. There's been a lot of transition in that team in the last, you know, two and a half years, with major guys stepping away, Kieran Reid and the like. So it's and they have a lot of new guys in their squad as well. So it's going to be very interesting to see if Ireland can put them under pressure, you know, early doors in that first test, how they respond. And but again, at the end of the day, it's New Zealand at home. Eden Park is the first test. I remember back in 2012, I was involved in the squad and we played there. And, you know, we got our arses handed to us, so to speak. So it's it'll be interesting to see if they react and we get a reaction from them at home, which I'm probably expecting, to be honest.
And with that, I mean, we talk an awful lot in motorsport about, you know, you learn so much from losses and defeats. But if you're gonna, it's gonna be difficult, and surely that's what everyone wants in the build up to a Rugby World Cup. And obviously, test wins are just brilliant to have as it is. What would you like to see improve from Ireland, even if, you know, think it's an uphill struggle at certain points? What would you like to see this Ireland group learn about themselves and improve on?
Well, I suppose in terms of the Six Nations, where, you know, obviously had the France game, where I think starting badly away from home has been a bit of an issue. Look, in the Aviva, I think Ireland are well capable on any day of taking any team in the world. But it's when you go away from home and we the team doesn't start well, which is seen as a bit of a trend, that's one area where we need to find a way to build ourselves into the game, especially away from home, in order to put us in a position to be within in the game at halftime and not be chasing. So that would be one area where it's just looking to start the game better. And then I suppose it's around depth then as well, in key areas where I think we're definitely going to have to find guys in certain positions that are going to back up the kind of seasoned veterans who've been there a long time, in order to build squad depth, build competition within the squad. So that's kind of the two areas where they'll probably look for improvement in the tour.
I saw today Sir John Kerwin was suggesting that Ireland were favourites for this one, and that New Zealand might have been underdogs. Obviously, stuff like that always flies around. Yes, stuff like that always flies around. But if I could trouble you for a prediction, Sean, where do you see this going, this series?
Look, I think a test win in one of the three games would be an outstanding return on the tour, and maybe another win against the Maori. Because I'm not too sure, especially with the way, if the tour, as the tour goes on, and maybe you could pick up a couple of injuries, how strong that midweek team might be. So a test win and one win over the Maoris, I think would be a great return and something to build on for coming back after the summer.
So you had the Irish perspective there about the tour of New Zealand. We're now switching rhythm a little bit here, and we're heading to South America. We're lucky enough to be joined on the line by Mark Palmer from the Sunday Times Scotland, who is out covering Scotland's tour of Argentina. Mark, how are things down there? Are you up to your eyeballs in steak already?
I'd love to say no, but yes, I have been. It's very cold. It's obviously winter over here, so it's been perishingly cold, even for a tough Scotsman like myself. But I'm glad to believe that when we get up to the northwest of the country later in the week, it's going to be considerably warmer, so looking forward to that.
Just whilst we're on travelling around Argentina proper, could you just tell our listeners where Scotland are playing Argentina for the first test?
Yes, it's a very good question. Multiple attempts and variations have been made in the name of this place, which is spelt J-U-J-U-Y, but I'm reliably informed, or hopefully reliably informed, it's Jujuy. So easy for you to say. And then we move on to the second test to the rather more manageable Salta before finishing up in Santiago del Estero. Now, these places are all up in the sort of Andean northwest of the country, he said knowledgeably. Salta, big rugby city in Argentina. The other two are infrequent spots on the Pumas kind of touring map, but they seem to like taking Scotland to the most kind of random corners of the country. So we'll go and see what the lights are in store there.
Well, you can understand why people would want to tour this game about because, well, Argentina haven't played at home for years, literally years. Yeah. You know, it's their big return to home test rugby. What's the sort of mood from people you've spoken to? There must be a sense of excitement that rugby's back.
Absolutely, yeah, big excitement. I think it was August 2019, so just before the World Cup was the last home game, which, you know, is remarkable. I know we were all starved of rugby for a while there, but, you know, to have had no home test match in 3 years is quite remarkable. So yeah, there's a vast appetite for this. You know, three games against Scotland that then segue straight into the Rugby Championship as well at the start of August. So yes, they are bang up for it. And there's also a desire to avenge what happened last time they played Scotland over here 4 years ago, when Scotland put 40 points on them in another grand location, Resistencia, up in the northeast of the country. So plenty on the cards and plenty on the line under a new coach, Argentina as well, Michael Checa, having replaced Mario Ledesma. So there's excitement about what he might bring to, particularly, you know, there's some really talented backs available to him. And, you know, combine that with some of the more traditional forward strengths that Ledesma brought back and tried to reprioritise, there's a potential for quite a tasty mix there.
I'll tell you what, well, we can talk about the test, and I'm particularly interested in what, you know, finding out, I suppose, throughout the summer what Scotland face against Argentina. Michael Checa is a really interesting proposition, isn't he? Because he's, as well as doing this, he's also got the job, he'll be coaching Lebanon in the Rugby League World Cup, and he is coaching the Green Rockets in Japan as well. So his diary isn't completely empty.
It seems to be a growing trend amongst international coaches to have multiple sources of employment. Lucky them. But yes, it will be interesting to see how he's juggling that. There was a potential for a bit of an intriguing subplot to all that, because he tried to sign Finn Russell for the Green Rockets with a monstrous offer put on the table a few months ago, which I'm led to believe Finn Russell did seriously consider kind of leaving the final year of his Racing contract for, but has elected to stay in France. So he's obviously a big fan of the Scotland standoff, who unfortunately is not here, having been rested for the summer, but it'll be interesting to kind of get his take on that and find out how he managed to spin all these many plays.
So Scotland, you know, we had a Scotland A fixture a couple of days ago in Chile. There, obviously, Chile are building up for their World Cup qualifier against the United States. You know, teams sticking together, playing really well in Slough. Guys have been together for a couple of years. Not quite up to the standard of Scotland. What sense have you got of the fallout from that test and the group that have come over from Scotland? You know, what's the sense of the young lads that got a run out, and what should we expect to see in this opening test?
I'll caveat all this by saying that I was up in the air when the game, literally up in the air when the game took place on Saturday night. So I have seen various bits that aren't geo-blocked, seen the tries. And, you know, it was probably as comfortable as we would have expected. I actually thought there might be a bit more resistance from Chile, given some of the recent results and performances. I thought they might be slightly more competitive. But what I would say is that, speaking to the guys in the Scotland team hotel yesterday, they were saying that certainly in the second half, Chile had massively stepped up the intensity and physicality, and it felt like a proper test match second half, whereas in the first it had been slightly more easy from a Scottish perspective. You know, obviously the sort of 12 strong Premiership based contingent hadn't arrived in South America at that point, because it fell outside the World Rugby windows. They're all back in the mix this week. So guys that put up their hand, you know, George Horn had a fantastic game, back to something more like the sort of traditional George Horn that we know, running off the shoulder and popping up on those inside lines. But again, he faces a pretty considerable obstacle in the shape of Ali Price for that starting nine shirt. Ollie Smith went well at 15, and again could well line up there again this weekend, given that Stuart Hogg isn't here, and we expect that player Kinghorn will continue in his kind of new standoff routine. So there might be a chance for Ollie there. Rufus McLean again, another sort of display of his wheels and threat out wide, but you would expect Darcy Graham and Duane van der Merwe to have those wing jerseys sewn up. But you know, it's a really interesting time because it's probably the last opportunity for Gregor to have a, you know, not to say experiment, but to try some different combinations, to have a look at different things before the World Cup. So you know, I personally would quite like to see a McLean get a start. We know, you know, what van der Merwe and Graham can do. We don't necessarily know yet what McLean can do at this level. We think we have an idea, and he's certainly shown the potential, but it would be good to see that in action and him given an opportunity. Standoff, as I say, as I expect, Kinghorn will be the man. He started the most recent test at the end of Six Nations against Ireland there. But Ross Thompson is another one who, you know, deserves a crack, maybe starting one of the games or as much time just can be found for him off the bench as possible. He's a guy that should be forcing his way into that World Cup squad in some shape or form. So it'd be great to see some more live evidence.
It's an interesting time, isn't it? Because we're now at that stage in the build-up to World Cup year next year where, you know, you'd hope that people have an idea of what combinations there are. Do you think Gregor will roll the dice a little bit with some of his selections? Do you think that we'll see some guys in places that we might not have seen, or combinations we've not seen before? Or actually, is it possible that it's just, let's get test wins under our belt, and then the best way to do that is to pick the strongest, most established combinations?
It's a really interesting one because, you know, as you well know, Gregor tends to do the exact opposite of what you expect he's going to do. But at this point, you would struggle to kind of even say what you expect him to do because, you know, there's no doubt Scotland do need to re-establish some winning momentum. It was a pretty poor Six Nations, especially having started so well with that retention of the Calcutta Cup. There were disappointing performances against Wales and France. Beat Italy sort of by the bare minimum almost, and then lost comfortably in Dublin as we always seem to do. So, you know, they really do need to get some positive vibes back around the place, and you know, the way you do that is by winning games of Test Rugby. Against that, as we've just outlined, there won't be any/many more opportunities to have a look at, you know, Sam Skinner in the back row, whatever it is. So, you know, my gut feel is that there might be some sort of halfway house reached here, that there'll be a measure of experimentation in inverted commas, but that we will see some of the more trusty guys like Johnny Gray coming back in to do what we know they're going to do and hopefully deliver another series win.
So what you're saying, Mark, is reading between the lines here, all in on Hutchison.
Well, now, if it was me, then absolutely. I think Hutchison's going to, you know, I think he's been grossly underused up to now, frankly. But he also, you know, I really want to see Scotland using a kind of second ball player at 12, the way that Chris Boyd's used him at Northampton this year. I know everyone still thinks of Rory as this kind of, you know, guy with a great outside break. And of course he has that and can easily slot in at 13, but he's played really well outside bigger at 12 for Northampton this year. I think long-term that could be a great way to take some of the sort of creative responsibility off Finn Russell, to avoid him having to think that he always has to pull something out of his backside, for want of a better phrase. You know, Cameron Redpath is another very obvious candidate for that 12 second ball playing midfielder role. He struggled with injury, as we know, is back on the way to fitness at Bath, and could have come on tour, but the preference was to leave him there to get a proper pre-season so he can get a real good clean run at next season. So yeah, I think it could well be a big moment for Hutchison as well.
Okay, time to put your big boy pants on, Mark. How do you see this series panning out? What do you think the results will be?
Well, I think I'm going to go for a 2-1 series win for Scotland. It's very difficult to know just what to expect from Argentina, as we were saying earlier. They've not played at all since last November, when we saw them run France very close in Paris. then get cuffed by Ireland and Dublin, having beaten a sort of very average Italy team along the way. You know, there's some class acts that we see week in, week out doing the thing. Carreras, Cordero, Kramer, Facundo Issa, the number eight, who has been, you know, fantastic in France for a number of years now. Some great individual talent. Creevy coming back into the mix for the first time in 3 years as well. Czech has finally granted his wish to return to the fold. It's how it all comes together, having not had much time in each other's company over the last number of years. But I do think that whole sort of emotional driver, you know, the best Argentine teams always have a big emotional factor to it. And the emotional driver of returning to home soil, playing for their public again, I think we'll see them hit a decent level, but I still expect Scotland to emerge on top over the piece.
And finally, Mark, personal milestones. How many bottles of Malbec personal are we hoping to have? What would you like to achieve personally on this tour?
Oh, survive 3 weeks of David Gibson. Is that good enough? Yeah. Well, I've already ticked off one. I've always been keen to go to a South American football game, and I managed that on Sunday night. I went along to watch Racing Club thrash Aldo Civi in the Argentine top flight. That was a great experience to see their stadium, which is just as you can imagine, a monumental mosh pit, basically. It was fantastic. So enjoyed that. Other personal milestones, break the world record for consumption of Malbec and steak.
Top stuff. Mark, enjoy yourself out there. Take it easy, and we'll hear from you when you get back.
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
So we've had chat about New Zealand, we've had dispatches from Argentina, and now we're hot-footing it to South Africa, where we're joined by broadcaster and journalist Lauren Jenkins. Lauren, how are things in South Africa?
Good afternoon. They are glorious as we speak. Alan, I'm just in the Monte Cassino Hotel at the minute where the Springboks are staying. You might be able to hear the birds behind me, the waterfalls behind me, because Jack Nienaba has just announced his team. Lovely day. Spoke to some of the Welsh guys yesterday. They're not too far away. Plenty of optimism there. But of course, the series hasn't got underway yet, so we'll see how it pans out. Not a huge amount of expectation on the Welsh guy's shoulders, but you know, it's nice to be here. It's nice to be in an open, restriction-free South Africa. And as of yesterday, there were only 3,000 tickets left for Loftus-Versfeld in Pretoria where the first test is. So we're hoping for a wild, passionate crowd there on Saturday.
What a G up, because I was going to start with going, it's all doom and gloom about Welsh rugby at the moment, Lauren. Give me a ray of sunshine. And it sounds like you find plenty out there. So give me a sense of, you mentioned a little bit of optimism. What are the silver linings that we're grabbing onto at the moment?
Well, don't get me wrong, Alan. There aren't many silver linings. You know, there's not much expectation on Wales for good reason, right? They've never won a test in South Africa. They're playing the first two tests at altitude. We're going to see crowds back, as I've mentioned. And South Africa have now got plenty of those World Cup winners. I think there's 10 in this team that won the World Cup, still in fine form. They've also got a new generation of guys coming through in that we've seen really shine in the URC this season. So, yes, it's the greatest of challenges for Wales, but am I devoid of any hope? No, you look at the Welsh squad, there's plenty of talent there. George North is back. I think he was probably one of the players we missed the most during the Six Nations. I think Wayne Pivac has used a total of 15 different combinations in midfield. Finally, we should see him settled at 13 at least. Who knows who will play alongside him. And, you know, we've got Lidiot, Navidi, Faletau, guys. I think Faletau will be a certain starter. Guys, there's plenty of talent there, isn't it? And plenty of those boys have had experience out here this season. The regions haven't won a game in South Africa and the USC, but they know what to expect. I guess the question is, how much will they have learned from those losses?
Yeah, certainly. We've spoken throughout the year on this podcast about what the South Africans, sort of like the Terminator, have been picking up bits and pieces through the year and only gotten stronger. Just before we go back to Wales, you've seen the squad announcement for the box. What's the team like, and what are we expecting from them?
So I think the biggest talking point is there's no Andre Pollard, and we probably know that's the one position where they're lacking a bit of depth. They've only had Yanchis and Mornay Steyn start there since Razi Erasmus took the reins in 2018. We know Steyn has since retired. So Yanchis starts at 10. Now, Pollard only flew in on Sunday, having played the top 14 final. So that is Nina Barr's reason. We like to pick players who have been around in the week. We like to pick players who are part of the plan. But, you know, certain South African pundits would say there's a big drop off between what Pollard can do and what we've seen from Yanchis in the last year. He plays in the Japanese league. He hasn't played a huge amount. That's probably the only positive for Wales. You know, seven of the pack started the third test against the Lions. In the absence of Vermeulen and Detoy, it's a back row of Khaleesi, Mostert and Visa. And then they've gone for a 6-2 split on the bench. You've got Marks, Kitchoff and Cock on the bench, who, you wouldn't be surprised if they came on before the halfway mark. You know, even saying those names out loud really hammers home how much depth they've got. And Willemse at full back, he did start there against Wales in the autumn, back to go off early. So we did ask Jack who would be the 10 cover if Yanchis did go off. He didn't commit to that. We've heard Willie LaRue has been playing then a week. So, yeah, maybe that's the only glimmer of hope for Wales is that 10 position.
Well, certainly there's some contrast and there's some similarities, because the contrast is obviously Dan Biggar is now well in harness as the captain of Wales. You know, it's a role that he seems to really enjoy and relish and has done well in, captaining from fly half. Andre Pollard, it's worth mentioning that he wasn't a nailed-on starter for Montpellier this season either, with Paolo Garbisi playing so well for them, the Italian fly half. Whereas you look at the back row, and my God, there's, on both sides really, there's riches with all the talent that they've got there. Is the biggest headache, selection headache from a Welsh point of view, Lauren, is settling on these guys that needs to be brought up to speed? Because we've seen a lot of personnel changes in the back row for Wales. There's a lot of talent there, but it's, you know, we've got World Cups rumbling down the pipe. Is it time to start establishing combinations?
Yeah, exactly that. And Russ Petty pointed out there's been 18 different back row combinations in 27 tests. Now, you look at the players they've got for this tour. They've got the old heads in Dan Lidiot, 34, Josh Navidi, 31, Faletau, 31. I would perhaps put my money on those guys starting. Don't know why you'd bring Dan Lydia on tour if you weren't planning to start him. And then, so they brought six back rowers, and then on the other side of the coin, Basham 22, Raffle 23 and Ratty 24. So I guess the question is, do you bring, you know, do you mix a bit of youth with experience? Do you bring one guy in, you know, Tommy Raffle? You've probably seen more of him for Leicester than I have this season, but it has been a key part of their success. But in short, they have to sort out the breakdown, because that's what hurt them in the Six Nations. There's no point having Alex Cuthbert making great breaks against England if you then lose the ball at the ruck. So we know how effective South Africa are at, you know, targeting the breakdown and nicking a ball off an isolated player. So that would be a huge, you'd like to think that would have been one of the main focuses for Wayne Pivac over the last few weeks.
I mean, taking what I've just said and completely flipping on its head, though, we always see new heroes emerge on tour. Are there any young players that you're particularly excited to see that maybe those at home that haven't followed so closely should keep an eye on?
Well, I mean, it's a small squad. I guess those back rowers, you know, will a Tommy Raffle get his first cap? I'd be surprised. Although, can I just say, I need someone to settle this for me, because watching BT, I do hear most commentators call him Tommy. Raffle. I'm gonna nail Verity down, the team manager, just to confirm that.
Please do.
I've been watching him since he's been playing under 20s for Wales, and I wouldn't have thought they would have brought just six back rowers and then not give someone like Raffle or even Ratty a first cap, even if it's off the bench. They've brought a 33-man squad, okay, that replicates what you would take to a World Cup. I think that's the reason they've done it. But then again, you know, you don't play three back-to-back tests against South Africa in a World Cup, and you have more time to prepare beforehand. So, you know, and they've also only brought four locks in Ali Wynne-Jones, Rowlands, Carter and Adam Beard. So one of those players goes down and you're in a bit of trouble. I don't think this is at all we're going to see many play, you know, maybe a Ratty or Raffle, but apart from those, I don't see this as being at all we're going to see many players cut through and earn a first cap. And you've got to remember, Pivac has handed out a lot of first caps already. He's been forced to do so because of injury. So this hopefully is the start of a more settled team just over a year out from a World Cup.
And a run of being injury free would also be high on Pivac's wish list, I imagine. You know, we've seen Wales really struggle with the injury list in the past. Am I right in thinking that everyone's fit as is?
Well, we think so. They said yesterday that Thomas Francis was fit. Now, if he wasn't, he'd be a big loss. He's been nursing an injury. So they said he's fit. We've been in situations before where a player's been deemed fit and it hasn't quite transpired that way on match day. But yeah, I'd expect them to go Thomas Francis, Ryan Elias and Wynne Johnson. Look, that's a huge area for Wales and where this game's going to be won. So let's hope they're all fit and firing and at their best come Saturday.
Well, absolutely, because producer Alfie and I were talking off mic, and one of the things he said is, "Why South Africa always seem to name their team very early?" And it's like, yep, because we know exactly what we're going to get from them, and they do not shy away from that, do they?
No, and apparently they were told on Sunday, so you know, there's always the risk that the team might get leaked as well. So if they know, if they're training to a certain game plan, then why not just tell the media? Although Jack did say it might not be this early every week. It might be a Wednesday or Thursday next week, so might be one to keep an eye on.
Okay, Lauren, it's time to put your rand where your mouth is. We've asked everyone that's guested on this one what we're predicting here. Is there a silver lining to grab onto? What's your prediction for this whole series?
Well, I guess the silver lining is that there is no expectation on Wales. And you look back to the Six Nations and their best performances came in those games where everyone was writing them off. Against France, they tactically kicked very well. They went with a game plan that very nearly almost worked. And against Scotland, you know, Scotland came to Cardiff as favourites for the first time in however long. And they beat them there. That said, the three-test series against the Box is very different. I think the best chance they may have is this week, actually, with Elton at 10. Let's hope he's not listening to this podcast. And we're a fully fit Wales. I don't know. I think most people are predicting a 3-0. Shall I go 3-1? Maybe. Let's go 3-1.
Is that possible? Are we playing an extra game just to get a win then?
No. Oh, sorry. Yeah, 2-1. Gosh, my maths has never been my strongest point, Alan. 2-1.
Brilliant. Well, we're heading towards the tests. Here we go. Lauren Jenkins in South Africa. Thank you very much for chatting to us.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thanks to Lauren Jenkins for calling in from South Africa, as well as Sean Cronin and Mark Palmer. The Ruck will be coming to you live from Australia as we give you updates from the ground on England's tour down under. This has been The Ruck from The Times and Sunday Times. Please follow or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. This episode was edited and produced by Alfie Reynolds. And remember, we heard from Will Kelleher at the start of his journey. Well, I think it's only fitting that we give him the final words on this week's podcast. Let's get an update.
Hello everyone. The last time you heard my voice, it was Monday afternoon in London Gatwick Airport, and now, for me at least, it's Tuesday evening. The sun has set in Western Australia and the Times are on the ground in Perth. Alex Lowe's already here and I've joined him. The beeping you can hear in the background is the baggage reclaim, so proof that we've made it. We're down under, we're on tour with England, so stay tuned over the next few weeks to The Ruck for coverage from the England tour to Australia. On The Ruck from the Sunday Times and The Times. Hope you enjoyed this week's episode. Goodbye.
The train is now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, Road Station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Off Air, the podcast with Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
I go to the sink and I have some cheese.
You eat cheese in the sink?
Doesn't everybody?
Every Monday to Thursday, Jane and Fee keep the microphones on after their Times radio show.
I think if we were to do a Mr. and Mrs.
Oh, no.
I don't know, how would that go in the booth?
Badly. It would go very badly.
Unencumbered and off air.
Two tiny women with gobs.
Off Air, the podcast. Now available on the Times radio app.